compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, 888-914-9149. By the way, I want to remind you that the Supreme Court had that hearing yesterday when it came to the case that was being considered yesterday. We won't get the judgment, or we won't get the decision, at least it won't be made public until next June. But this is the one that is taking up the question of the law in Mississippi banning abortions and whether or not that's going to be permitted to stand. So the oral hearings were heard yesterday in the Supreme Court case. This is in the Mississippi case. And it's all said and done, as I understand it, at least from the standpoint of what will be said before the Supreme Court. Now, I saw on Twitter this morning a brilliant, brilliant take. This is from Alexandra DeSanctis, and she said, her new married last name. She's referring to the hearings, and she says, the burden of parenthood is an obstacle to women's success, the pro-abortion attorney tells Amy Coney Barrett, a mother of seven who is a sitting Supreme Court justice. Zing. Can you imagine being that attorney and you're arguing before the Supreme Court and you're selling your shtick that
there's no way a lady that's getting pregnant can get anywhere in this life?
No, it's impossible. You have a kid, that's it. Your life is over.
He's telling
you have more than one kid.
A Supreme Court doomed. Justice. How many kids does she have?
Seven. She has seven kids. She was a judge, a law professor. She's now a sitting Supreme Court justice, mother of seven.
No, that's impossible.
And this, well, I mean, just what kind of mental disconnect must this attorney have had?
I'd love to see
be
her
standing there.
I want to see her face as he's saying this to her. She just like sitting there with her arms up,
woman.
Like what? Oh, it was a woman.
I don't know if it was a.
Oh,
I don't
even
know.
Be better.
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know. But I mean, that was such a great, funny line and so insightfully true. So I've never met Alexandra, but if I ever do, I'm going to thank her for that one because that was great. I shared it with a bunch of people today. I'll reread it. And I retweeted it. So if you want to see it, you'll see it on my Twitter feed at Patrick Madrid. The burden of this is what the pro-abortion attorney was saying to Amy Coney Barrett. The burden of parenthood is an obstacle to women's freedom. I'm sorry, to women's success, the pro-abortion attorney tells Amy Coney Barrett, a mother of seven who is a sitting Supreme Court justice. That's just so perfect. But, you know, I think the irony is lost on them. I think they're just too encased in their mania for abortion to see something as obvious as that. That's how it looks to me anyway. Oh, well, 888-914-9149. We do have a couple of lines open. We're going to get to those here in a second. I do want to mention one or two other things here. The Home Alone house, remember the house where the little kid, I'm trying to remember his name, the kid that gets left behind,
Macaulay
his parents
Culkin
go to France.
Or,
yeah, what was his character name? Not Billy, what was it?
No, it's on the top.
It wasn't Billy.
I know this, I only don't know
it. Was on
it
the top of
asking
my head, too.
There's a million
because
people
because the
out.
Mother's on the plane,
Kevin.
And she shouts it. Kevin, that's right.
Kevin.
Kevin!
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, so check it out.
That sounds right.
You can rent the Home Alone house. Macaulay Culkin, you're right. This was from CNN. And by the way, that movie came out in 1990. Man, that was a long time ago. So the house looks much like it did in the 1990 holiday film. The lawn jockey statue standing outside, a candlelit dining room for eating mac and cheese and planning how to fend off burglars, paint cans dangling above the staircase. The pet tarantula that terrified the wet bandits will be there too, according to Airbnb's description, because it wouldn't be Christmas without an arachnid. Perhaps most surprising is the home's host, Buzz McAllister. Kevin's pugnacious older brother, Buzz, apparently has mellowed out enough to allow guests into his childhood home per Airbnb. To stay at the McAllister place won't break the bank. Again, it costs just a quarter of $100. So $25 is all it will take to rent this house for one night. It will be competitive. Bookings open on December the 7th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And the home will only be available for one night the following week.
Whoever rents that's going to they're going to destroy that house. They're going to do all the things that Kevin did. They're going to be
jumping on the
bed.
Could you imagine the hatred? Can you imagine the hatred? Well, I wonder if anybody would try to rob the house that night.
The owners should try to rob their own house.
Rob it
that night. That's good.
Keep the change, you filthy animal. I can almost kind of do that voice. Well, $25, but could you imagine? So you're talking about somebody to trash that house. Could you imagine the national hatred that would focus like a laser beam on the person who destroyed that house from Home Alone? I don't even want to think about it.
Never live it down.
Joe Pesci would be very angry. Let's put it that way. So that's real. That's courtesy of CNN. It's going to go on Airbnb for one night only. And you'll be able to, well, if you're the lucky person. I don't know how they're going to make that work. How do you pick who gets it? Also, and I first saw this and I thought it would be a great name for a garage band, Living Robots. This is from the New York Post. The world's first living robots can now reproduce, according to scientists. Details about the robots created using the heart and skin stem cells from the African clawed frog, clawed as in C-L-A-W-E-D, were unveiled last year after experiments showed they could move and self-heal. Now, the scientists at Tufts University, the University of Vermont, and Harvard, who make the xenobots, say the tiny blobs can also self-replicate. The results of the new research were published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences on Monday. Experiments showed that the organisms can swim out into their dish, find other cells, and assemble baby xenobots. That could be another good garage band name, the baby xenobots. I'm not entirely sure what a xenobot is, but it sounds pretty cool. A few days later, the babies became new xenobots that look and move just like the initial creation. The new xenobots can then go out and self-replicate again. This sounds like basic biology, but there's some machine connection to it. Yeah, if you're interested, it is interesting. Kind of scary, but interesting too. And that's available on the show Twitter feed if you're interested.
These people have never seen a science fiction movie, ever.
I was thinking about one the other day, Cyrus. You may have seen it. The movie was called, I think it was called Hiss. And it has to do with a guy from back in the 70s who was taking like some sort of snake serum or something like that, and he turned into a snake. That was stupid.
I was busy reading the Bible while you're watching.
Yeah, you were probably busy praying or something. Yeah, it was pretty dumb. Okay, back to the phones, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Marie in Laguna Niguel. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
I've had relatives and friends who have left the church and now attend Christian, non-Catholic churches. And I need to know where I can find a specific tract, a specific brochure, from somewhere that I could hand it to them, that they could read to see what they're missing by not receiving the sacraments, like infant baptism, baptizing their children, like anointing of the sick. And one of my relatives passed away from COVID and was away from the church. And it just, it's really sad to me. And I to talk to them is one thing, but to hand them something that they could read, just really specifically that they could look at and read and understand the graces that they're not receiving. I don't think they know what they've left.
Yeah, sounds like it. Have they left for any given group, or are they just floating away from the church?
Well, one married, they're floating. They're like in this area of the country, like a big Saddleback type church.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I grew up just miles away from where you are right now in Mission Viejo. So I can picture it. Well, I mean, Catholic Answers is stocked to the gills with those kinds of things. One thing that I have a certain fondness for is I wrote in preparation for World Youth Day in Denver, which was in 1993, a task I was given was to write a 30-page booklet that would be distributed to the young people who attended the World Youth Day. And so I did. And it's a booklet that was named Pillar of Fire, Pillar of Truth. And in that 30 pages, I think Carl Keating, he wrote sort of an introductory page and a final page. But the guts of it, the middle 30 pages or so, that was my way of trying to introduce somebody cold to a big picture look at the Catholic Church, sacraments, saints, the whole thing. And that's an easy read, doesn't take long. It's simple, but it's explanatory. And millions and millions of copies of it have been distributed around the world in various languages. So it seems to be having some effect. So that might be a place to start. And you can get it very, very cheaply at Catholic.com. Now, they also have many tracts. I think there are over 100 tracts that are available there on issues like the sacraments. Those are all things that I would recommend. Father Mike Schmitz has a real knack for explaining the faith on his YouTube channel. He's very photogenic and he's very persuasive and interesting, and I really admire the work that he does. And those are free, so you could send links to videos like that about why it's important to receive the sacraments and go to church. That might be helpful as well.
Okay, and you bleeped out when you said Catholic.com, that pillar of fire and pillar of truth. Where can I obtain that, please?
Oh, you're right, so Catholic.com.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so Catholic.com is the website for Catholic Answers, and when I was working at Catholic Answers, that's when I was given the job to write this booklet. So you can get it from them, and I don't, you know, I'm not sure if you can buy like one copy. You might have to buy 10. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, but it, you can easily find out over there or give them a call. And then Father Mike Schmitz, I'm not sure if you heard that part, but he has a very voluminous YouTube channel, and it's easy to kind of go through and search through things that you'll find there. Oh, you know, as long as I'm thinking about it, there's another YouTube channel that I very strongly recommend. It's called Aquinas 101. And these are videos that are put out by the Dominican friars of the Eastern Province, the province of St. Joseph. They're very helpful. They're very explanatory. And they give you visual as well as commentary. And it's just a very basic kind of Thomistic look at all kinds of different issues. And they have them on the sacraments. They have them on just about anything you could think of. And the videos tend to be in the 5 to 8 minute range. So you don't have to invest a lot of time, but you'll learn a lot in watching those videos.
Perfect.
So maybe send a few of those over there too.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you. God bless your day.
Indeed. Thank you very much. 888-914-9149. Now let's go to Josephine. Welcome, Josephine.
Hello. Thank you for being there, Patrick. I have a quick question.
Sure thing.
I bought a copy for Christmas, a copy of your book, Surprised by Truth, the Volume 1. For each family. So, quickly, how do I give it to them? Should I hand it to them? Should I send it in the mail? And do I inscribe something on the inside? Or, and if I do, what should I say? That won't turn them off. They're, most of them are non-practicing, liberal-minded, and pro-abortion. So, I don't want to turn them the other way.
Well, a few thoughts come to mind. Number one, thank you for sending those books to them. Are you talking about the first volume or one of the others?
The first one.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good one to give. Keep in mind that those stories are from people who were believers. They were evangelical Protestants who didn't like the Catholic Church, and then they wound up becoming Catholic. So their starting point in those stories sounds to me like it would be somewhat different from the starting point that your family members are at right now. In other words, they're more secularized and more kind of detached from faith. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, and they've all been baptized.
Okay.
They're all
Catholic.
So I'm
not trying to discourage you.
Yeah, no, okay. I'm just saying, maybe I chose the wrong book, huh?
Not necessarily, and there may be other uses for that book for other people in your life. But one book that in that series that may be even more helpful is a book, or at least it may speak to them more readily, and that is the book called Surprised by Life. And that is a book of, 10 or 12, I forget which, but it's 10 or 12 conversion testimonies, just like the first book, but it comes from a completely different angle. These are people who were not like Bible-believing, church-going people. Their lives were very messy. So abortion, divorce, sexual promiscuity, drug use. One chapter was written by a woman who was never baptized, never had any religious upbringing. She grew up in a broken home, and when she was in her, I guess she was in her 20s, you know, very beautiful young woman, and it suggested to her that she make a lot of money as a call girl. in San Francisco. So she becomes a call girl. She's got this very jet-set lifestyle, making tons of money. And it's in the midst of all that that she discovers Jesus, and she eventually finds her way to the Catholic Church. So the reason that I referenced this title, Surprised by Life, is because that kind of story might be more interesting, or they might be more willing to read that kind of a story versus a story
where
somebody is saying, well, here's the Bible verse that I had to look at, and you know what I mean? That may not resonate with them the way the Surprised by Life stories might resonate with them.
Okay. So if I do order some of these, should I inscribe something or just let it fly?
Yeah, I would. No, I would. I mean, show them you love them and that you care about them and that you thought this book might be interesting. And maybe you could just say that. Just say, you know, I love you and I thought this book might interest you. I found the stories fascinating and I thought maybe you might enjoy it. You know, love Josephine,
yeah,
or whatever your relationship is to them. Something nice like that. You know, I think that way it's non-threatening, it's non-confrontational, it's just a nice gesture. And typically with these kinds of books, what happens is somebody starts flipping through the pages and they start reading the story, and they're interesting, and it's like you become engrossed in it. And before you know it, you've read a whole chapter. And then you say, oh, well, what's the next one? And what's the next one? And as they are reading these stories, they're imbibing the truths of the faith as seen through the lives of these people who had to claw their way out of these situations. So
excellent. Okay, excellent. All right, great. I do appreciate that. Thank you, and thank you for being there.
You're welcome. Before you go, a little parting gift. Are you familiar with the song Josephine by the artist Chris Rea, R-H-E-A?
I just know the one Josephine on the machine.
Well, there's a really, really great song by Chris Rea. It's either R-H-E-A or R-E-A. There it is. Yeah. That's the song right there.
I never heard that. Thank you so much.
All right. Check it out. I think you'll like it. It's a fun song. All right. Do we have to take a break? We do have to take a break. So let's take a break. And we'll come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right here on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester. Okay, we are back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show, don't you know? The phone number is 888-914-9149. I want to send a shout out to all the people who attended my event last night and the night before at Holy Family Catholic Church in Noblesville, Indiana. And I was really pleased, Cyrus, you'll like this, last night as I started my talk, there were, I don't know, 250, 300 people there, something like that. I asked if people the night before, when I told them about the Relevant Radio app, I knew that a bunch of them had downloaded it. And one guy put his arm up, he said, yeah, I listened to the show last night, and apparently it's starting to catch on here in Noblesville, Indiana.
That's
and
great.
I'm very happy to hear that.
Everybody has a smartphone now, and I had in-laws over, and they're like, we just can't get Relevant Radio up where we live or in the car. And I'm like, well, you have the app. I'm like, yeah, well, listen to it through the app. It's
fired up.
It's crystal clear. It's the way to go. That's how I don't listen via the radio anymore, the AM or FM. I listen on the app.
Yeah, it's like the Relevant Radio metaverse. You can't see anything, but you can hear it. You know, I was thinking about the great success thus far. It's really an astonishing success thus far with our new offering of the Merry Beggars, you know, and their the Christmas Carol production that they're doing, which is really taking off. And if you haven't subscribed, by the way, if you want to hear it in serial installments, just go to relevantradio.com and you'll see the information about the Merry Beggars. But it is a fantastic, very high production quality production of A Christmas Carol. Now, this is just the first thing you're going to hear from the Merry Beggars going forward, and there's plenty more to come. We're very proud of them and very glad that they are with us here at Relevant Radio. We want you to know about it. But Cyrus, I got to thinking yesterday, you know, is there a place for the grouchy beggars? Could we, maybe you and I and some other grouchy people, put together the grouchy beggars? And I don't know, maybe
you better trademark that immediately.
The grouchy beggars. No, I think there's only room for the Merry Beggars. They're doing such a great job. But here's a question I've got. I want to share this with all of you. Tell me what you think. My number is 888-914-9149. I am going to go to the phones here in a moment, but I want to share this with you first. A Washington State artist who portrayed himself as a member of the San Carlos Apache tribe has for years misrepresented his heritage, deceiving collectors who thought they were buying authentic Native American carvings, according to federal investigators. Lewis Anthony Rath, who is known for his wood carvings and totem poles, admitted that he is not a lineal descendant or an enrolled member of the San Carlos Apache tribe, states a November 23rd criminal complaint reviewed by the Daily Beast. What an unfortunate name for a publication. According to the filing, Rath, 52 years old, told agents from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services that his mother told him he had some Indian bloodlines that may be Apache. However, he explained that he later discovered through DNA testing that he had Mayan ancestry from Mexico. Rath, who goes by Tony, is now facing 3 counts of misrepresentation of Indian-produced goods and products and 2 counts of unlawful possession of migratory bird parts, including golden eagle feathers. The top charge carries a maximum sentence of, Cyrus, you ready for this? 5 years in prison.
For bird feathers?
I guess all of the above. So the top offense, I don't know if the top offense is misrepresentation of Indian-produced goods. Could be that. Or it could be the unlawful possession of migratory bird parts. Now, Cyrus, in your case, do you have lawful or unlawful possession of the migratory bird parts in your possession?
I don't have...
Is that lawful for you?
Yeah, nice. You almost trapped me. No, I don't have bird parts, except for the chicken
kind.
Breast in my fridge.
And that's going on the kitchen table this evening.
That's right. I'm okay. Looking at this guy's work right now. He's really good. This is... And he's working with real wood. He's cutting down trees, and he's this guy's a very talented artist. What a shame.
Well, I have a question. Maybe you can venture an answer to it in just a minute. I want to share a little bit more. So, the Indian Arts and Crafts Act of 1990 is a truth in advertising law that makes it a crime to sell counterfeit Native American artifacts and collectibles. Frequently knocked off items by Native Americans include Indian style jewelry, pottery, baskets, carved stone fetishes, woven rugs, kachina dolls, and clothing, according to the U.S. Department of the Interior. In 2015, Kansas City artist Terry Lee Whetstone was convicted of falsely portraying himself as a Cherokee while marketing his work as Native art. Another popular quote-unquote Cherokee artist, Jimmy Durham, was later discovered to have no Cherokee relatives at all. Earlier this year, the feds dismantled a multinational crime ring selling imitation Native American jewelry sourced from a factory in the Philippines. FWS official Edward Grace said in a statement last April, after a Texas man was indicted under the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, he said, "Native American art fraud is a serious crime that hurts consumers and severely impacts the economic and cultural livelihood of Native American artists, craftspeople, and tribes." So Rath has, been under the microscope for a while, claiming he's an Apache Indian, and his artwork therefore qualifies as, Native artwork. So he's in big trouble. So here's my question. And I understand it. I mean, there's a good reason why this law exists. If he's fraudulently claiming himself to be a Native American and he's selling his goods and wares on that basis because people think, ooh, look, I'm getting something authentic when they're really not. I get it, and I don't quibble at all with this law. So why is it okay then for a man to dress up as a woman and go win track meets when he's not really a woman? Why is it okay? Why, if it's wrong for this guy to pose as a Cherokee...
Even when he thought he was.
That's right. In his own mind, he identified.
Mom said I was, so... I am. That's what Mom said.
And even if Mom hadn't said it, what if he just rolled out of bed one day and said, "I identify as a Native American," even though the science doesn't back that up, and my ancestry and DNA and all those other things say I'm I'm from Sheboygan and my family comes from Germany or someplace like that. I mean, who cares about that? Who cares about the science? So if it's wrong for him to do this, and I admit, I think it is wrong for him to do it, it's fraudulent. Why is it not fraudulent for a man to dress up as a woman and say, "I identify as a woman," and then go in and win the women's events against women athletes who can't, because of maybe size and weight differences and muscle mass differences, they can't compete with a man. And it's okay for him to do that, and you better like it. And if you don't, we're going to deplatform you from Twitter or Facebook if you don't like that.
Yep. Yeah. Wasn't there just another MMA batch or a fighting match with and this man pummels the woman in the same weight class. He pummels her. It's not even a fight.
If this had happened in any other context, he would be in jail right now for that. But because this is a quote-unquote sport and he's a quote-unquote woman, he can do this with impunity and be celebrated for that. That's all. This story unto itself, it's an interesting story. People shouldn't do that.
So he's getting an award while this other guy's going to jail.
Yeah, this guy, Lewis Anthony Rath, he may be in prison for years. You know, maybe they'll plea it down to something. I don't know. But he could be in prison for 5 or more years for doing this. Okay, fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that, but it's the blatant hypocrisy and the blatant stupidity. On one hand, we can recognize the problem with the misrepresentation and fraud with regard to Native heritage and Native art, but something even more obvious, as in you're a man or a woman, and it goes exactly in the opposite direction. If they applied the same logic to the man presenting himself as a woman, It's the same thing. It's a parallel one to the other. And just as people are getting ripped off because they're buying art that's not really Native American art, they think it is. It kind of looks like it, I guess, but they're being defrauded. The women who are competing in sports against men who are dressed as women, they too are being defrauded. That's my point.
Amen.
I don't know what else to say.
A woman.
Yeah. No heat, no judgment.
Get that in your spirit.
One other thing, Cyrus. I posted this on Twitter with you in mind, by the way. So it just astonishes me how virtually nobody got what I was doing here. So it's a picture of a brick wall, and instead of another brick in the wall, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 bricks in a wall, kind of patching the hole in the brick wall. And so my caption to this was, "Wrong, do it again." I'm not saying it quite right. Wrong. Do it again.
Right. I got you.
Nobody got it. Everybody who's commenting on this completely oblivious to the Pink Floyd reference. Nobody gets it.
I was taking a break from social media over the week, so I didn't. I'm going to go back and look for that because I appreciate a good Pink Floyd reference.
And I thought I was doing, you know, something really funny, but only one person of the people who looked at this. Let me find who that was.
No pudding for you.
Mac, it's Bobbert Mac on Twitter. He says, all in all, it's just another ... He seems to be the only person. Some people are going off on Trump. Some people are going off on.
They're projecting their own images on this wall that you put up.
They're turning it into any possible thing other than what it actually was. And I just some person says how most of us approach repentance and penance. One person says you had one job. All in good fun. They're participating, and that's nice, and I like that. But it was just amazing to me how what I thought would be so obvious, everybody missed it.
I would have got it.
That's all. All right. Let us go back to the phones. Let us go to, here we go. Weo Jaja in Rancho Cucamonga. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick. So my question has to do with the math.
Okay.
Moses built the worship space based on a replica of something he saw in heaven. John witnessed in the book of Revelation some kind of divine liturgy going on. So when we go to mass, is it more like a Zoom call, if you will, participating in something going on in heaven? Or is it more like popping in a VHS tape and rewatching, in an unbloody manner, what happened at Calvary? Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. First, let me recommend a book that tells you this it'll give you a book-length answer, and that is a book by Scott Hahn called The Lamb's Supper. And so that is a whole book just about your question. What are we seeing at Mass? What are we doing at Mass? So if you are inclined to do so, I would get that book, The Lamb's Supper. So short form, you and I, when we go to Mass, are being made present in a mystical manner, both at the Last, I shouldn't say both, at the Last Supper, at Calvary, where the sacrifice that Christ foretold the night before at the Last Supper took place, and in the heavenly sanctuary, where Christ our High Priest is eternally presenting himself as both our priest and victim to the Father for all eternity. And that's the liturgy that you're referring to that St. John sees in the book of Revelation. So we are, when we go to Mass, we're made present, although our senses cannot apprehend this, we don't see this, but we are entering into the reality of all three of those historical events, and of course the heavenly one outside of history. So in a nutshell, that is what's happening at Mass. It's not in the way that you put it, and I understand your analogy here, but it's not like putting on a VCR and watching what happened a long time ago. Rather, you are, and maybe the metaverse might be a better example. It's not a perfect parallel, obviously, but if we can think in those terms, where you immerse yourself in it. So you are now in these mysterious realities, and you see with the eyes of faith, not with your own physical eyes. It would be more along those lines, that you're made present there, as opposed to just kind of watching a videotape about it. You see what I mean?
Okay. Yes. All right.
Yeah. And Scott Hahn does a marvelous job of explaining it in much greater detail, but that book will really get you much deeper on that.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great to talk to you. And by the way, your name, Weojaja, now, first of all, am I saying it correctly? And second, what is the background of that name? I find it fascinating.
So it's Weojaja, like Jaja Gabor.
Okay.
From the Lakota language. So we have a lot of mixture, but the name is Shining Light.
Oh. Did you say Lakota?
The Lakota, uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Great. I have relatives who live near the large, was it Pine Ridge, I think it is, the large Lakota reservation outside of Rapid City in South Dakota. So I have
okay.
some
Yeah, I was born and raised
minimal.
In Chicago, but back in California now. So, yeah, never spent any time there. Like I said, a lot of mixture.
Understandable. Well, that's good. Thanks for educating me. So Weojaja means shining light. Is that right?
Correct. Correct.
Great. Thank you. Well, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. And we will move on now to... No, we're going to move on to a break. I almost called it, Cyrus, before you started the movie, before you started the music. I was almost there.
You can't open
What is this? What is this?
This is from Pink Floyd, The Wall Live, and most people haven't heard this, but it's just like a... Just go to break. Nobody cares.
Rubbish. Let's go. We'll come back to better music than this.
Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it,
real life solutions you can believe in.
The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We can work it out.
Now that's a good music choice, Cyrus. That's a very good music choice. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to dial. We have some, yeah, we do have a line open. You can call it now, 888-914-9149. How about David in Clovis, California? Hi, David.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I had a question for you.
I have to stop you. You're going to have to get off speakerphone or Bluetooth or whatever it is, because it's hard to hear you. Can you take that off, please?
My apologies. Sorry about that. Is that better?
Okay. That's much better.
All right. Later this month, my family and I were planning to visit Our Lady of Lourdes in Lourdes, France, and we're doing this as a family pilgrimage. Just wanted to know, how can our family prepare spiritually for this pilgrimage?
Well, there are many ways you can do. Among other things, is you could read the story of what happened with Our Lady and with Bernadette there. Read the story. Be familiar with the history. There is a movie that came out in the late 50s, early, I think it was the late 50s, called The Song of Bernadette, which is a dramatized version of what happened. I would watch that if you haven't already watched it. Obviously, in prayer and receiving the sacraments, you can focus your mind on your devotion to Our Lady and ask her to not only keep you safe while you're making this pilgrimage, but also to intercede for you, that God will grant you all the blessings and all of the gifts that He has for you there. And who knows, maybe there'll be something for you there that you will only discover once you make that pilgrimage. But I'd say know the story, be prayerful in anticipation, and have your, you know, spiritually speaking, have your arms open and ready to receive. That's what I would recommend.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have you by chance seen that movie, The Song of Bernadette?
I have not, but I plan to this weekend.
It's wonderful. And it came out at around the same time as another movie, and it may be the same director for all I know. It was another movie called Our Lady of Fatima. And that, too, was from the late 50s, I believe. And it's another dramatization of the story of Fatima, but it's the same kind of movie. It's very well done, very respectful, and very interesting. And I think when you see that movie, The Song of Bernadette, you'll really, really become familiar with what happened there and why this is such a big deal. When you get there, please pray for me. I'd sure appreciate that. Thank you. Let's go to Matthew now in Kentucky. Hello, Matthew.
Hey, sir. How are you this morning?
I am not too bad for a sinner.
Well, that's that. I mean, we can all hope for that, right?
Indeed.
So I was calling to ask you a question. My wife and I, a little bit of background on the question. My wife and I are both in healthcare, and we deal with mainly with end-of-life stages. And so we had a little bit of a philosophical debate about the obligations of a Catholic to try to prevent someone from committing suicide. Now, I guess in the spirit of true philosophical debate, we can frame it in the context of European countries. If someone is deemed to be of sound mind, you know, by the state, we'll say, and has gone through the counseling and is looking at these terminal life issues, where does our obligation stop and their individual sovereignty begin? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Now, of course, there are different scenarios in which somebody might be about to commit suicide. So if you're, you know, you see somebody standing on a 10th story ledge outside of a building or a bridge or something like that, and you have an opportunity to come over and talk to the person, and if necessary, even try to grab them before they fall, if you can do that, I'd say there is an obligation to do what you can. You obviously don't want to do something that would, you know, cause them to jump. So that's a judgment call, how best to go about doing that. But yeah, I would say
you
would be wrong to stand by and do nothing. I'd say that would be a sin of omission. Now, in the case of somebody, let's say, who's dying in hospice, but is not, you know, not dying right now, but wants to die and wants to commit or have somebody commit suicide for them, physician-assisted suicide, for example, if you were in a position where you could try to counsel that person and encourage the person, don't do this, don't ask the doctor to do this, I think there's a moral obligation to do what you can there. It would be, in my view, a sin of omission if you were to say nothing and then the person does commit suicide, or the person, you know, gets assisted suicide, and you look back on it and say, if only I had said something, maybe I could have encouraged that person. That, to me, seems like it would be a sin of omission.
Correct. And,
is that
and
my answer to your question?
Spirit of the, in a way, in the spirit of the conversation, we both of us do not, you know, condone or, you know, promote suicide in any way. I guess what I'm trying to say is my wife and I were having this discussion, and we had this scenario where, like, okay, if we knew that our neighbor, okay, was dying from a terminal illness and it was horrible, and they have conveyed their, intent to peacefully and without endangering anyone else and their own life, do we go over there every single day and take, you know, the medication from them? Or do we say, okay, look, we have counseled them, we have tried to help them, we have prayed with them, but this is what they are going to do, and if it is within their legal right, you know, legal right,
yeah,
to do this, then we have done all we can do and still have fulfilled our obligation.
Yes. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't recommend a kind of what's the minimum amount I have to do. I don't want to propose something like
that.
But you also can't do more than you can do. I mean, there are certain limitations. Now, what if, for example, when you're there to visit and you somehow, I don't know, you somehow misplace that medicine. It somehow gets misplaced in a drawer or someplace and it's, you know, it's just not available when the person might want to use it. I could see that happening.
Correct.
You know, it's not being stolen. Yeah. That would be wrong. But if it just manages to get misplaced somewhere, huh, that's too bad. I wonder how that happened.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the it was a pretty deep conversation. And it's, you know, not that we had we have very deep feelings about how to prevent it and what to try to do about not allowing it to happen. But where would we fall within, okay, you've done all you can do within your legal limit, you know?
Well, there's that, certainly. Is this person in question a relative or an acquaintance, or how do you know this person?
This is purely hypothetical. Like I said, we are both hospice nurses, and so,
so it's in theory.
And
I see.
Yes, in theory, yes.
Okay. Let me recommend a book to you.
Question.
I don't recall that it has a chapter on this particular scenario, although I'd have to go back and check it. But it's a book called Life Issues, Medical Choices. And it gives roughly 50 scenarios, not unlike this one, where it walks you through what is the morality or immorality of these different acts. And what should you as a believer do or not do in a given situation? And there is a lengthy section there on end-of-life issues, assisted suicide, and other things. So I have a feeling that book right there is going to be really valuable to you and your wife.
Okay. Yeah, we have no interest in having a hand in it at all. We were just debating the legal obligations and legal ramifications of our efforts to try to curb that occasion.
Yeah. You know, we all hear about these terrible stories of the angel of death hospice care worker or the angel of death orderly who intentionally kills people. And you are the opposite. You're like the angel of life hospice worker who is working to try to help that person retain their dignity and their life and not be put down like an animal. So my hat's off to you.
It's a daggone shame because almost every time we are dealt a new patient, we have to go through the whole episode of, look, we are trying to prolong, not necessarily prolong, but give this patient
preserve
a quality of life that, yes, mm-hmm. yes, we're trying to give them a quality of life as best we can for as long as they've got, you know. And right. And it really is a shame because there are some buzzwords as far as medications go that are completely misunderstood, and it's kind of disheartening to feel like you're going in to help a patient and the family thinks you're there just to end their life. It's sad.
Well, let them know. I'm here to serve the life of your loved one, not to take it. And I promise you, I will give
Absolutely.
The best care possible. I would be very comforted if the hospice worker told me that about a loved one.
And we do. We if there are any questions whatsoever, we sit the family down to counsel and say, look, this is what we're here for. We are not for anything else. This is what we're here for. So eventually it helps. They have to hear it a few times, but eventually it does work.
That's good. Well, more power to you. And I hope that you never are faced with any type of real crisis of conscience like this, but it sounds like even if you were, you would know the right thing to do. I appreciate that, Matthew. Thank you very much. Let's go now to Al in Rhode Island. Good morning, Al.
Good morning. The question is, how do I explain to my non-Catholic friends that when we go to communion, we receive the body and blood of Christ, but then they turn around and say, well, you're just receiving the body. you're not receiving the blood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just tell them that the church teaches that when you receive even the smallest particle of a host, and just that, you receive all of Jesus' body, blood, soul, and divinity in that host, lacking nothing. And if you were to receive just a sip of the precious blood, however small, you would be receiving all of Jesus' body, blood, soul, and divinity, lacking nothing. Now, the question you're asking, Al, it's a very good question for this reason. There are so many people nowadays, since introduction of lay people receiving under both kinds, receiving the precious blood as well as the Eucharistic host, that pastoral decision has, in my view, it has been unhelpful for this reason. Many people are now confused about this, and they think, like the people you're talking to think, that unless you receive both, you have not received all of Jesus, and that's simply not true. It's completely not what the church teaches. And just as a little historical footnote, there is a heresy that has sort of reared its head again. And people who hold this view are not formal heretics. They don't intend to be heretics. They just don't know. They've never really been taught. And that heresy is known as utraquism, from the Latin phrase which means both and. We would translate it as both and in English. And essentially it gets to the question of, do you receive all of Jesus under one kind or the other, either the Eucharistic bread or the precious blood, or do you have to have both and? And that's a heresy to say that you have to have both and in order to receive all of Jesus. And that was one of the dangers that the church recognized over the centuries. And so, in part for that reason, there were other practical reasons, but at least from a theological standpoint, that was one of the really important reasons why the church did not permit lay people, outside of certain special occasions, for example, like your wedding ceremony, the husband and the wife would both receive under both kinds. But strictly speaking, for the better part of 1,500 years or more, lay people did not receive under both kinds. And it was a wise pastoral policy because people could clearly understand they're receiving all of Jesus. Now, is the symbolism more accentuated? Certainly. The symbolism of body and blood, when you have liquid and solid, but that's at the level of symbol. True, the symbolic view is brought into greater clarity, but it doesn't affect anything as far as what you're receiving or who you're receiving in this case. So even though the readmission of receiving the body and blood of Jesus under both kinds is being permitted right now, I think even at this point, not that long after, we can look back and say that was not that great of a decision. And in future years, the church may decide to return to its more traditional standpoint for that reason, because people are just constantly misunderstanding this point. I hope that's helpful, Al. Gee, I wish we had a little more time, but I've got to take a break. We'll do that and come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. We have a whole hour ahead of us, and we still have a couple lines open. Most of them are full, but you can grab the open ones by calling 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'm also going to share with you some news that didn't really happen, that people reported on, but it didn't really happen, right after this.